Welcome back. It's Recovery Sort Of, the podcast where we explore the struggles of life, the challenges of mental health and recovery, and the spaces between. We express our personal views on life here, and this podcast is not meant to replace medical advice or tell anyone the right way to live. This podcast is best used as a place of curiosity and questioning to accompany you on your journey. Be aware there is strong language. This week, we're picking up where we left the conversation off last week. Here we go. What mood is that you wear this time? Why do you get high to change the seat you're
in? Time you won't come back again. What mood is that you wear this time? Like with the uncertainty part, you know, I just try to, I guess it's a recovery thing, like have faith that the universe is going to take care of things, that there's some higher power, you know, I hate to say God, but there's like, it's going to be okay. It's just, it's going to go the way it's supposed to go, whether I fucking like it or not. And it's going to happen the way it's going to happen.
That's actually where I thought this conversation about the unknown was going to end up going. So now that we're here, like, yes, do we have a belief in the universe? Is it a God? Is it a, like, what else helps you with the unknown? I definitely tend to believe that there is some kind of energy, power, and that all this stuff is going in some sort of order that it's supposed to. Like, I don't know if that's totally individual situations. Like, I picked the specific coffee I was supposed to this morning. I don't fucking know. Or if it's just more general that everything's happening the way but I do tend to believe in some kind of order, which does bring me peace. And I don't know. I guess that would be harder if I didn't have a belief like that.
I don't have a belief like that.
That's what I thought. So yeah. How do you work with that?
I think one of the things that I've felt for many years now, being a participant in a program that encourages you to have, I mean, let's be honest, everybody is guided in 12 steps towards a sentient being that is, you know, all knowing and all powerful.
Loving, caring.
Loving, caring.
Not me. I'm just saying.
Has your best interest at heart and recognizing the feeling of safety and having something like that, and the value in having something like that. I don't have that. And I think it does contribute to, I think at times in my journey, it has resulted in me feeling like I need to exert more control because quite literally, if I don't do it, who will? It's like that kind of thing. There's not something out there that's going to make sure I'm okay. If I don't do it, no one's going to do it. So in the broader sense of uncertainty, everything is uncertainty. For me, I think I differentiate a little bit between the type of uncertainty that's just could go this way, could go that way, and then the type of uncertainty where it's like uncertainty that my basic needs are going to be met. That feels like a much scarier type of uncertainty.
See, I feel like, and I thought you were going to go to this place with that, like what I thought you were describing was that when you don't have a particular attachment to the outcome, right? It doesn't mean anything more than the outcome. You're not going to worry about it too much, right? But when it has a deeper meaning, like it ties into a core belief about me. So say my job endeavor failing means I'm stupid or I can't win at life, or like it ties into something I'm already struggling with, and already that's when it's going to be way more a priority for me or a problem. Like that's going to kick up and cue my nervous system to danger because it's around a core belief that I can't survive if this thing goes bad.
I guess
that's what I was picturing.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't examined it at that level. Or through that lens, I guess. So maybe I wouldn't argue that that's not accurate.
I mean, it's the same thing you're saying, because that in my mind, that is a basic need that we don't talk about with humans. We need to feel safe in our nervous system and like we're enough of a person and whole and all that stuff. And like same kind of idea, just a little more. It's interesting. I feel like a spiritual person would say, well, who kept you alive when you weren't doing anything for yourself, when you were using? I feel like that's what they hit you with in the 12 steps.
OK, kept me alive when I wasn't doing yeah, what
the whole,
for myself.
The whole, like, when there's one set of footprints on the beach, like, that was God carrying you, not you doing it for yourself.
I mean, in spite of luck, coincidence, a series of events. I mean, yeah, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't saying you should, like, seriously consider that option. Right, I was just saying, like, I feel that's like that's what you would get in return.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't. So I'm just starting the third step in ACA right now. So obviously there's a lot of higher power stuff and what do I believe in and what is turning my will over.
Is
look
it the doorknob?
Like.
Are you going with the doorknob?
I'm not.
Light bulb, right?
Nope. Yeah. Nope. Actually, what I think I might do, and I posed this to my sponsor like maybe a month ago or so, is can when I get to a point where I've created this concept of this inner loving parent, can that be my higher power? So that's what I'm working towards. But I haven't gotten it all figured out yet.
That's interesting. I don't, it changes. Who knows? I don't think I have a person as my God. It's not like a guy or a girl or any of that, like a being. It's kind of this belief that like all the energy in the universe is what God is and we're all made of it, right? Something along those lines. But I do, when I am really, really hurting inside and I reach out to this universal energy, I picture it like the perfect, loving, comforting father that I have tried to make my reparenting come from, right? Like this perfect, like warm, fucking Mr. Rogers ass guy that just comes in and swoops in and holds the fuck out of me. Like that's what I picture the energy doing with me. So I like that idea personally. Like,
yeah,
kind of ties in with where I'm at.
Yeah, it feels a little circular, but I think probably that's
it's all circular.
Okay, we'll see if it.
We're making
it
the whole fucking thing up.
Holds water. Exactly. All exactly.
Life in general, we're making it up.
Exactly.
Huh. It's interesting though. I want to send you back to listen to our step two discussion way back in the day, which is probably awful. But Billy said a thing about a person, a second person being a power greater than us, right? And like, I think of that a lot in my life that like, because I think we're all energy and blah, blah, blah. You don't have to tie this in, but like, I can't be God, but me and another person can be God. Right. So like God happens. I mean, well, obviously the creation of life takes two people, it seems like. But even beyond that, just that idea that like I can't show up with grace and compassion and give that fucking divine expression of accepting someone until somebody's on the other end of it feeling shameful.
But it's can't like you do God it to happens. Yourself?
I feel like I can at times. But there are times when, man, that external version of that coming from my kids, coming from my wife, a good friend, like that shit is powerful. That feels divine, right? That feels almost above human when somebody can look at you at your lowest and give you that grace and compassion and understanding. And like that's my understanding of where God and the higher power is. It's between two people. It's what happens when two people come together and try to love each other. That's fucking God.
Yeah, just think how powerful it is. Like if you're struggling or going through a tragedy and someone just comes up and gives you an intimate hug.
It's fucking amazing. Like how? Right? That's God to me. Right. Like it's the two of us. So like when I think of higher power, I think of like who have I surrounded myself in my environment to be able to count on when I can't count on nobody else. So I'm not alone, right? Like I create a God in my world by having this group of people that I've cultivated.
That's interesting.
Something like that.
I think I heard in 12 steps, it was something about like, so when you comb your hair, yeah, you could do it by yourself, but it works better when you use a mirror. And so meaning like the relationship reflected back to you is where the real magic happens. But that's a really beautiful version, what you just described. I like that.
Comb your hair or style your hair?
Well, this is, yes. If it was AA, you know, we're like, big book. We just had a combs back then, you know.
Right. Old men with their combs.
Brushes weren't invented yet. I don't know.
They couldn't figure out where to get the part.
Yeah. There was no style back then. It's It's like, get the grease to lay it down and put a hat on.
Yeah, to me, combing is like just getting the knots out. I don't need a mirror for that.
Well, I just think everything we already need is already here and is already, we already have
here,
everything
here
that we
here,
always
here,
need.
Like in your heart.
Just in the world. It's like the same as like comets, everything that's here, this fucking cup is all made up of stardust that came from some fucking meteor somewhere. It's the same with us. Like we're all, we got everything that we need here. And like the higher power for me concept, like there's sort of good evil, if you want to call it that, but there's like what I'll call good energies, like love and compassion and trust. And then there's like envy and jealousy and that stuff. And which one do I want to look at? Which ones do I want to let guide my life? You know?
I think there's just love and fear.
Yeah.
I think there's love. And then there's the fear that makes us forget we're human and treat others poorly.
And different shades of each. That's like, so like the different categories he just said, it's just varying shades of fear.
Well, I like the idea. I mean, for me, like, I like the sort of general concept of like the seven deadly sins kind of thing. When you think of like greed and lust and malice and, and you know, like all those, the sloth, like those are all things that if I get sort of tied up into them, that's pulling me in a direction that I don't want to be living.
I think it's stuff. Yeah. So I go out. I got these neighbors across the road from me. I'm pretty sure they don't fucking listen to this. They got these three, like, really, as not a dog guy, I'm sure people would be mad at me. These look like fucking dogs that would attack me if I broke in. They look like defense dogs, right? Trained to, like, not let anybody in the house is what they look like. And they're loud and angry and muscular, and they have run up on me and my kids in my yard and walking around the street before, right? And, like, I don't like that motherfucking shit. I get, So anyway. They also have this thing. I wake up early and go out and sit in the dark a lot of times on my porch. And they have these three gigantic floodlights that go off when they come out to get ready for work. And they stay on forever and all kind of stuff. And like, I've been looking at this, right? Because my initial take is just, you fuckers are fucking my life up, obviously, right? But I'm like, okay, you're a human. You have a right to live. I'm a human. I have a right to live. Why does this feel so bad for me on the other end of what you're doing? Right. And so I started looking at it and like they have these things, the lights and the dogs, for protection, to protect their stuff because their stuff was stolen before in the dark. And so they believe they have a right to protect their stuff. And every time we have stuff and we have a right to protect it, we say, fuck human life. My stuff is more important than anybody else's life. And that's what keeps happening in our world, is we've all decided that stuff is more important than human life. Because if we could just say human life is the most important, we'd never have wars or fights or anything, because we'd find some way to cooperate, because that's more valuable than the fucking stuff. And then that's just what I've come to, like, looking at it, and I'm trying not to judge them for it, but I fucking hate those bright lights when I'm trying to be out there enjoying the dark, and the dogs that scare the fuck out of me when they run around, and I don't know. Anybody else got thoughts about that?
In my brain, it's way more practical, because we have a similar situation with our neighbor where they have these floodlights. And I'm like, you can have floodlights there, but I want to put up a taller fence to keep your fucking floodlights out of my yard, because the same thing. Like, we like to sit out on the back porch or sit in the backyard, and we like the dark. It's nice back there. It's peaceful, not with their fucking floodlights on shining in my yard. And right. I don't care what they do in their yard. They can have all the floodlights they want. But how do I got to keep them out of my yard?
This happened. So. Oh, go ahead. Oh, this happened to me yesterday. So I was in my backyard having a burn. I had like a bunch of brush from the winter. It was nice. I enjoyed like kind of tidying up my garden, burning stuff. And it was like quiet. I didn't have music on. I had like 3.5 hours of quiet. So my neighbor came home, and they use the alley like their personal driveway. And he came home to work on his girlfriend's car and was blasting music. Like it was like, I was like, dude, I'm like 6 feet away from you. And he's like blasting it. And then after about 20 minutes, maybe he thought I was just passing through, not paying attention that I have a fire going. Like I'm there for hours. And after about 20 minutes, he turned down the music. And I had to think, I was like, is this aggressive against me? Like for existing in my backyard? But then I thought, you know what? This is probably not even about me. He just got home from work. Maybe his girlfriend's like, I thought you were going to work on my car. Like he probably, and he like had to blast music to like, to get that aggression away. I'm like, you know, this shit is probably not even about me. And he just came home. Just like the floodlights and the dogs aren't even about you.
They're not about me. But
we all kind of have to coexist. Yeah, it sucks. You know, I agree with you. And like, I don't know. That gave me peace, though, to remember. It's totally an alcoholic thing to be like, he's doing this against me. Mm. But he's not. And it just gave me a little peace, like, to remember it's probably not about me. He's not thinking about me at all.
It's not about me at all. And yet all of us collectively ignoring each other's needs or hurts, I think, is a big part of the problem of why none of us feel good.
I agree.
That's a big value I try to bring up to my kids a lot. It's like, how or what you're doing affecting the people around you.
Yeah.
You know, are you impacting everyone around you? My son. Yeah, I get it. You're okay to watch videos on your phone. You can't crank it up where I can't even hear the television. like there needs to be some give and take there.
The solution I wanted, and I know this is not the solution for you, but as you're telling the story, I'm like, well, I can just come over and I'll let you know, like, I'll interact with these dogs and let you know if you actually need to be scared of them or not. If I could solve that problem.
Potentially, they could be scared.
Well, you and I had that we went on that hike, and like I learned that day that your solution for that problem is definitely not my solution, because I don't give a fuck if the dog is safe or not. I give a fuck how I feel.
But what if I told you that dog is safe?
That doesn't
safe.
Make me feel better when it runs up on me. No, because I've been told dogs are safe and then they bit me. So I don't really give a fuck what people say. You don't know what that dog's doing or what he's going through today or how he interacts with me or what he's encountered before in his life and what registers as danger to him and
uncertainty,
what motion I might do. Right. Yeah, you can't tell me
uncertainty
that.
Around animals.
I mean, I'm a dog person, but I've also been bit by a dog, and I'm very cautious around dogs I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I consider myself a dog person, but if I don't know, I remember that dog bite was like worst. It was like, I would have rather have given birth to another child than be bit by a dog again. It was horrible.
Really? I loved mine. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
Yeah. It made me feel alive. I got a lifetime of avoiding shit like that, like, because I'm so scared of it. So I love when I go through it and I'm like, fuck, I'm tough. Why do I'm so scared all the time? I'm fine.
I'm tough. I'll have another baby. Don't bite me, dog. Like,
I'm like, it's cool. I like things that remind me I'm alive, honestly. So I'm okay with it, but.
Just remind yourself of that when the dog's running at you.
It did rip an old hoodie that I did love, though. It fucking ripped an old hoodie. Mm-hmm. And I got a new one out of it. The person replaced it, which was kind, but that old one was my favorite.
Do you take cold showers to remind yourself that you're alive?
Every once in a while.
Oh, see, I don't do that either.
No. I did a cold plunge. It was awesome.
Hmm.
I say that's really cool for your
No cold plunges, system. No jumping out of airplanes, none of that.
It messes with your nervous system. It activates it. It gives you an opportunity to figure out how to breathe into the sensations in your body that aren't necessarily comfort. And like, I do a thing more often than that, because it's not quite as discomforting, is especially through this winter. And I guess this will go away now that it's getting warmer. But I would just come out of the shower, and my room's not all that warm because I like to sleep in kind of a chill. So I would just come out of the shower into that. And like what I would do before, when you hit cold, you kind of like your body freezes up and you sort of scrunch in and all that and shiver. And like what I've been doing coming out of the shower is like pushing my shoulders back and my chest out and just taking that really deep breath of like, let me just experience this level of chill, right? It's not super fucking cold, like cold ass water in the shower. So it's not terrible, but it's brisk. But it's like, what's it like to just be cold instead of suffering from cold?
It won't kill you.
You know, kind of like that some people feel the rain and some people just get wet. You know what I mean? I want to be the guy that's like, what is this experience like? And can I tolerate some discomfort? And how do I do with that? What can I give myself in that? And
this does bring us back to uncertainty too. You know?
It does. So one of the main things they talk about regulating people in you know, a dysregulated state is bringing them back to the present moment, because all dysregulation is a story about the future and the past. And like, that's where our brain goes to this doom and gloom story that we can't get out of, because we can't actually do anything about the fucking future or the past.
Even when we're like so dysregulated that we're not even thinking, you know, like clearly enough to be like, this is the future, or this is the past.
Well, I mean, maybe that's not what's going on in that moment, but you're definitely not here. you know, you might get to a point where the thinking isn't there. It's just that doom and gloom feeling of going to die, or extreme pain or whatever it feels like. But the answer is always to come back to now. What do I feel? What can I see? What can I smell? What can I taste? What can I touch? What can I sense on my skin? Like, that really helps people out of dysregulation. And so maybe that's one of the tactics for the unknown, is just, where am I at right now? You know, be where my feet are. I'm not in this place of failure, even though my body's feeling like it. And I think even noticing that we get dysregulated, just thinking about the possible future of failure, is a good place to start with tending to ourselves. Like, wow, it's so hard to live a life and try new things when my fucking nervous system goes haywire just thinking about it. That's a really hard existence. How can I treat myself better? You know? Where were you going to take us? Was that it? Sorry, did I interrupt?
No, I don't know. But no, I agree, because I forget if I mentioned it in this episode or the last one about the anger workbook I'm working with. That's exactly it. It's like the first tactic is like bringing back to the present moment by like sight, sound, touch. Mm-hmm. You know, they go into like specific practices. And I've been doing that, not just for anger, but for anxiety and stuff. Mm-hmm. So simple. And breath. But that's like from the Buddhist practice too.
I think another one is changing the goal for the moment. Right. A lot of times when I'm getting to that frustrated, dysregulated state, it's because I have an intended goal of figuring something out or coming to a solution or getting the job done or whatever it is. And like when I get so dysregulated that all of it's hurting and I'm just angry and I'm doing it poorly at this point, like I need to change the goal for the moment. Okay, yeah, the goal is to get that shit done at some point. But right now, the fucking goal is to take care of myself. Jesus Christ, I'm losing my mind. Right. So I got to adjust that goal. And maybe that can be part of your exploration of the unknown. Like, I'll explore this until it starts feeling bad. And then I'll back off and just take a break, because the goal then is just to, you know, feel better for a minute. Give myself some relief.
Yeah. Shorter goals. Bringing it closer. You know, why am I projecting out 5-10 years? Let's figure out what I'm going to do this month.
I sort of chuckled when you first described it, because what I thought of it as is like, oh, you're having a midlife crisis.
That's so funny.
That's what those things are. Like, what the fuck is going to happen with the rest of my life? Like, and I, not to the point of being overwhelmed by it, but like, I think that now, like, my kids are older. One of them's getting married, you know, and they're like moving. And now I'm moving on to like a new chapter of my life. So for me, I do think it's important to have like some sort of what I'll call it, like a goal, although I don't know if it's a goal. It's like, but this is where I'm headed. This is what I want to be doing in my life. And like I keep saying, because I want to speak it into existence, like I want to be retired from work by the time I'm 60 and earlier if I can. But that's 10 more years of work. I'm fucking want to be done. I don't want to work till I'm 67 or whatever the fuck, you
it's
know,
outrageous.
Like, yeah. And you hear like the saddest stories of like people that are like, oh, I worked, you know, and finally hit retirement. And then when I retired, I didn't know what to do with myself. And I had nothing and I hated my life and I died. You know, well, they don't say they died, right. But, you know, that's what happens.
I love when people tell me that story. No, I'm just
I love hearing dead people. But you hear those stories. I'm like, I so do not want that to be that for me. Like, I want to have plans of, you know, what my life is going to look like in the future beyond this particular job that I'm doing, or beyond, you know, raising these kids or whatever my present moment is. I don't think that's bad. And it's fun to have this, like, things to look forward to and things to work towards. I think that can be good. But I can get stuck, you know, in a place of like, what am I going to do? And how are we going to figure this out? And what's going to happen? You know, that's not healthy.
I think Billy and I started this podcast to talk through our midlife crisis, honestly.
Yeah, right.
I think that's been the whole goal of this since the beginning, and we just didn't know it.
So I bring my problems.
Were you young for a midlife crisis when this started?
I'm not.
I wasn't.
I'm probably well past half of my life.
Yeah.
My father and his father both died in their 50s.
I was like 40. How long have we been doing this?
Like 5 years, haven't it?
So I was 45.
That
I'll be
feels
50
like,
this
that
year.
Feels yeah. like, no, but that, but you were 39.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, too young, because I'm 39 and I'm not ready for a midlife crisis.
Oh, no,
yet.
I'm
this
all
is
over
a very
it.
Self-interesting I also, question.
Not that this matters for our show, but I look at retirement different, because I don't plan on retiring. I left construction in my early 30s. I went to school for 7 years on student loans and like considered that my midlife retirement and figured I would do therapy until I can't anymore. Like,
you're senile.
Well, and even to the point where like, if I can't take a caseload anymore, maybe I could just do consultations or help other therapists with their case, those kind of things. Like, so I don't really plan on retiring, and I just want my life right now to look like I want it to fucking look and be sustainable, because I'm not going to get that future to look forward to. And like, also, why do I want to wait another fucking 15 years for a life that I enjoy? Like, it needs to look like that shit now for me.
Maybe this is a midlife crisis. I vaguely remember my dad like having a midlife crisis in his 30s. That's what they called it. And I think that was like a hot buzz thing in the 80s too.
Oh, yeah, it's a stupid
buzzword.
Like,
it's a midlife crisis, yeah.
Well, I think people get to a place in their life where all of a sudden some of the rules they've been listening to in their life, they realize they're not paying off, and they can make some drastic decisions in other directions, right? Maybe that looks like a huge car purchase for freedom or something like that they wouldn't let themselves have. But I think what it's really referring to, there's a lot of different, like Erickson's got stages of development, and it's moving into a new level of maturity. Like for me, it is definitely realizing that my grandfather died in his 60s and my father died at 56. And like my reality could be 12 more years or less. And like that changes the fucking way I look at my life at this point. And so I think it is moving into these different stages of like, this isn't about what can I gain here anymore. This is really about what the fuck am I leaving after
and
I go.
I mean, at least for me, a lot of it had to do with like the, what I feel like was misinformation that I got from society of like, yeah, you're supposed to get the wife and have the kids and get the house and the career, and then you're going to feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in there about, hey, what do you enjoy? Like, what do you like to do? What do you do for fun?
Right. What's your favorite dinosaur?
About that shit, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite dinosaur?
Then you start to feel like, oh, I'm not doing anything that I like or that's fun. Maybe softball on the weekend. Like, what the fuck's that about?
Right. I don't know. Did we help you with your uncertainty, Jenny?
Yeah. If we can summarize a few of the pointers, I mean, I don't know if that's helpful, but like, it sounded like self-talk, we didn't want to call it affirmations, more like self-talk.
Like reprogramming that core belief understanding of what failure is and what it truly means about you as a person.
Okay.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah, that was a little different than the, like, no matter what, I'm going to be okay.
Because you got wings.
Right,
I like that little nature example.
Yeah.
Your wings will pick you up.
The bird doesn't trust the branch. It trusts the wings.
I like that. And then shorter goals. And
staying in today.
Yeah. Try not to have a midlife crisis.
Be where your feet are.
Yeah. I always liked that one in the 12 steps, though. I can't critique that.
Hmm.
We got on a good God tangent, though.
Yeah.
Or a higher power tangent.
Good God. All right. Go out there. Be uncertain this week. See how it feels on you. Try some coping strategies for it. And we'll see you next time. Have you found that listening to the Recovery Sort Of podcast has helped you in your day-to-day journey? Please share the message of compassion and well-being with the loved ones in your life. Connect with us more at recoverysortof.com, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, and other social media spaces. And have a great week.